I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
And welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. And this week, we are joined by Jackie Hansen. She's the owner of Central Park Pet Retreat in Salt Lake City, as well as Ashley and Ryan Wolfheit. I'm sorry, I did it wrong. They're founders of Bark and Biscuit. It's a dog training business in Salt Lake. And this week, we are going to talk about COVID and its impact on people's families, as so many people have chosen to make themselves pet owners and added, dogs and cats. And as it turns out, I guess ferrets to their households. So first, I want to start off by asking Jackie, can you talk a little bit about how you got into the pet daycare and retreat business? By the way, I want to go to a retreat of any kind. That sounds fun.
We owned the building for several years and leased the property.
Speak up just a little bit.
Okay, we owned the building for several years and actually leased the building to National Veterinary Association. They were a Central Valley vet hospital, and they had six vets at one time, and then they closed. They didn't need all of that space. So I was stuck with a dark building, and property taxes were coming up, so we had to reinvent the space and turned it into a doggy daycare and boarding facility.
So in that way, I mean, it had just been your first foray into, you know, doing this. What kind of made you decide I'm going to do a dog retreat?
You know, I have a friend in Heber City, Tony Coombs. She owns Coombs Kennels, and she has been a dear friend, and she came down and looked at the space, and there was a huge secretary pool receptionist area, and she says, this is where your indoor play yard is going to be. And I just kind of followed her lead, and we walked around and turned the parking lot into a play yard and went from there. She was really my mentor. I would never have even considered it if it hadn't been for her helping me.
Because you'd never been an entrepreneur before. This was your first business venture, right?
Yes, this was my first business venture. I've thought many times maybe we should have put in storage garages.
Just let people store their stuff there?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts in a doggy daycare and boarding facility.
And, yeah, but you've been in business for how long?
8 years.
Well, so it's been pretty successful, and that's pretty good.
It has been successful. It's been a good thing. It's been a fun thing. The clients have been fun to work with, and the animals are great, and I've learned a lot, but yeah, it was natural. It was really a natural. Once I got into it, it was a natural thing. It felt comfortable. And
had you been a dog owner before?
We've always had dogs and cats and animals of every kind.
Excellent. So Ashley and Ryan, I was going to ask you kind of the same thing. How did you guys come to decide this is what we wanted to do?
Well, we actually didn't start the business together. I started it myself. I had a dog who was the kind of dog you hear about in the news. He was extremely aggressive towards elderly people and young boys. And because of that, I spent a lot of time learning how to work with him, and started to realize that I had a natural knack for dog training. And then, so I started the business, and I think about 4 years in, I hired Ryan, and we ended up falling in love and getting married, and now it's a family-run business. So
Yeah, that is fantastic.
Yeah. So, Ryan, what did you... had you ever been an entrepreneur before? Had either of you been business owners before?
I, you know, just the when I was a kid, I always would take around a wagon with ice cream and sell it to other kids. And I've always kind of had little businesses going. I come from, my dad's an entrepreneur as well. He owns his own business. But this is the only actual legit business I've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've never owned a business before this. This is my first. My parents also owned a business when I was a kid as well, though they were entrepreneurs.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Amy, you said you had a question?
Yeah. I'm just wondering how COVID impacted both businesses independently. Maybe Jackie first. Tell us, how did the COVID shutdowns impact you, and how have you, I guess, adapted?
It was tough. I didn't realize what was happening. All of a sudden, business started to go down. And then it was obvious that it was the COVID and people weren't traveling. And then as soon as the governor came out with the mandate that businesses needed to be closed and people shouldn't travel, I think it was the fear. No one wanted to go anywhere. No one wanted to come out of their homes. And it wasn't until... And so the business we had at first was business from the essential workers,
mm-hmm.
the nurses and the people in the police department, and it's those people that absolutely had to go to work. And then eventually people that worked from home got sick of working from home with their animals. So that helped pick up business. But during that first month, we were just, I had two employees there, is all. We never closed, we stayed open. But I think the slowest day was, we had two cats and
wow.
two employees.
And used to having dozens of animals, I'm imagining.
Oh, dozens. Were
you worried that your business wasn't going to survive if everybody was going to stay home?
You know, I was pretty naive. I was an optimist until we had I had borrowed 3 months worth of payroll. Well, actually three payrolls. I borrowed money to make payroll. I was not going to close because I knew how hard it was to build back after closing. And I knew there were other doggy daycares that were closing, and you just don't come back after closing your doors. So I was insistent we stay open. And then after borrowing money for three payrolls, the PPP money came in and saved us. I think I would have probably had to close if that hadn't happened.
So Ashley and Ryan, what was the situation with you guys? Because how long had your business been around?
We've been open about the same amount of time as Jackie. We've been in business for 8 years. And same at the initial outbreak, there's a lot of fear. Most training appointments were canceled because we do all of our training in home and one-on-one. One of the most important things with training is getting the owner on board. And so we really saw a drop there. Of course, we do boarding and daycare as well, and those dropped, especially with people staying home. We have a lot of airline clientele, pilots, flight attendants, and so of course they had to drop off. They were afraid they weren't even going to be able to keep their houses. And sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Well, and we also, that was really hard at first, but we also, you know, have training, and as people were adopting those dogs from the shelters because they were home more, training all of a sudden started to blow up, and we were doing online appointments, we were doing Zoom appointments, and things like that to maintain social distancing. And it was really hard the first month of COVID, but then as people were adopting all the dogs from the shelters, they kind of realized they were a little in over their heads with some of these dogs. Yeah. So we actually picked up pretty, most trainers we know as well had a pretty busy year last year, but it was really tricky to work around COVID.
Yeah, we really had to adapt and set up online protocols for a lot of our programs, which has actually worked out really well. We were afraid of that at first because we were thinking it had to be face-to-face, but it's actually, we've set up videos and things like that to help support the appointments, and it's really worked out well for us.
When we come back, I want to continue that discussion, and I'd love to be able to discuss the issues new dog owners who, you know, think it's a great idea to bring a dog home, but they didn't realize it may be more than they expected. We're talking today with Jackie Hansen, owner of Central Park Pet Retreat in Salt Lake, as well as Ashley and Ryan Wolfheit. They are founders of Bark and Biscuit. It's a dog training business and also a daycare facility as well in Salt Lake. Right now, you're listening to Voices of Reason.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Amy Donaldson and Jason Lee speaking today with Jackie Hansen, owner of Central Park Pet Retreat in Salt Lake City, and Ryan and Ashley Wolfheit. They are founders of Bark and Biscuit, which is a dog training and also a doggy daycare facility. You guys were talking. I want to start with Ashley and Ryan. You know, when everybody starts in COVID, they start getting dogs. There's a lot more to it than meets the eye. Amy, you kind of thought that there are some things that we should probably know about that?
Well, I just wondered what they were saying, because I think it's important to understand that COVID actually changed the entire rescue system. The shelters and rescues always work together, and they also have breeders in pet stores, which are a different universe. But I think you have already had shelters and rescues trying to work together to save all the dogs that we can and find them homes, permanent homes. But shelters had to close down. Some of those are county-run facilities, and some of them never have reopened to in the way that they functioned before. Some of them do now accept appointments, but a lot of them had to get their animals to rescues so that they could find homes. And then rescues, like the one I'm involved with, we relied on events on Saturdays. Almost every Saturday there was an event somewhere. We teamed up with stores like PetSmart or Petco, and those were gone. We couldn't do those. So everybody kind of had to rethink, how are we going to get these dogs adopted into permanent homes when we're not allowed to? We had even fosters who were like, I'm not going to meet with strangers because we're afraid of COVID. So there was definitely some, you know, creative thinking, some people were afraid. People were, you know, wondering how this was going to work. And I don't think anybody anticipated how long it was going to last, or that almost all businesses would go work from home so that people would get lonely and decide that they needed a canine or a kitty companion. So I guess the thing that I wondered is, like, what happens when you go, you have a whole bunch of people adopting pets, maybe for the first time in their adult life. what kind of problems are you seeing people bring to you? Some of the ones I see are like socialization issues, or just where can I find a puppy class, or a first, you know, level one obedience class. What are some of the things you're seeing?
Yeah, for sure. Socialization is probably the biggest thing we saw an issue with. Dogs that weren't interacting with other dogs or other people have been coming to us with a lot of issues. That lack of socialization has been pretty dramatic. That's one thing. The other thing, the dogs are home alone with when the owners are working from home, they're very used to being with them all day. And even dogs that were with people for years, they're starting to see behavioral issues that they didn't see before, just because there's a big change for them with that owner being there all the time. And you're starting to see a little bit of separation issue with that as well. But the big thing is, I would say that biggest thing really is that lack of socialization for us and for our clients. It's been these dogs don't know how to properly interact with other dogs. They're very scared of other dogs. They're, you know, really scared of people, because that's just kind of the world they've been brought into right now.
Yeah, that's the really unfortunate thing about a lot of these younger dogs that we're seeing right now. We're seeing a lot of aggression and reactivity issues because they just don't know how to interact around people and other dogs. And we specialize in a lot of that socialization. So it's we're helping, but there's a crucial time period for a lot of those dogs, or for all dogs, when they're developing. And unfortunately, a lot of that has been missed.
So when you say there's these crucial developments, what do you mean? What are we talking about?
For puppies between the ages of 8 weeks, or 6 weeks actually, and 16 weeks, the social connections in the brain are being created. And so if they aren't introduced to a lot of new things, that's not just other dogs, it's people, sounds, everything. If they're not introduced and exposed to those things, they will develop fear problems often. Throughout the puppy's growth, they have fear cycles, fear periods. And if they aren't helped through those in the correct way, it can cause issues as well.
So, Jackie, I'm wondering, since your business is primarily is daycare and you know, providing socialization, how has that impacted how people, when the dogs come to you, how does that impact how they behave with other dogs?
I agree with Ashley. We have seen a lot of socialization problems, and I didn't really understand where they were coming from. But she shed a light on that these dogs were in shelters and not being adopted. And we've seen a lot, you know, and missed that socialization between 6 and 16 weeks. So we've seen a lot of non-social dogs come to our kennel. And that is one thing that separates us from a lot of other daycare and boarding facilities, is that we'll take non-social dogs. And we give them individual play, or we give them private play. And we work really hard to find them a play group that they'll fit into. And that's been difficult in the last year.
Has it been difficult because you have more of those dogs?
Yeah, I think looking back, we've got a lot more. We have more non-social dogs than we have had in the past.
Tell me, when somebody has a dog that they think is non-social or hasn't been socialized well, or maybe it's reactive, tell me, what do you think, kind of what number one and number two, Jackie, you first, things people should do and should not do? And then I'd love to hear from Ashley and Ryan as well.
Well, first of all, people don't ever think their dogs are non-social. It's like a kid going to kindergarten. My child would never misbehave. And we do an evaluation when they first come in to make sure, to just see how they react with other dogs. And where was my question?
Well, no, the idea is that when you do that, when you see that, and like you said, people don't think their dogs have any problems, how do you convince them that, well, there are some issues here that need to be addressed?
Individually, we speak to them and just tell them that we're going to put them in. We don't call them non-social. We tell them we're going to put them into a selective play group. They won't go out with the general dogs. Most of our dogs just go out and play, and they all get along. But there are certain dogs that need to be put into a selective play group, or maybe can just play alone. And so we explain that to them, that they get one-on-one time with an employee, but they spend more time in their kennels than a dog that is properly socialized.
But so what do people, what I wanted to know was maybe one or two things that people could do to help their dogs if they do recognize that their dog is not social.
So actually,
absolutely start when they're young to give them all of the experiences they can possibly have with new people and new sounds and other pets and cats and big dogs and little dogs, just so that they develop a security. These dogs come with a lot of fear that have been isolated, maybe with just their owner and no one else. So my suggestion would be get them out in parks where there are children and other animals, and just expose them to as much as you possibly can while they're young.
When we come
back,
give
those animals some confidence.
When we come back, I'm going to have Ashley and Ryan weigh in on this too, because you know, one of the things I recognize is, and I've volunteered at animal shelters locally for many years, and I enjoyed it a great deal. However, when the dogs that came in, when you saw some of the issues they were having, I think it's overwhelming to people sometimes to try to figure out how they can help when they think it's the dog that's a problem, and they don't realize sometimes they've contributed to it pretty greatly. We're speaking today with Jackie Hansen, owner of Central Park Pet Retreat in Salt Lake, and Ashley and Ryan Wolfheit. They are founders of Bark and Biscuit. It's a dog training business in Salt Lake. When we come back, we'll hear more about how to help your dog that you might have decided to make a family pet during this COVID pandemic. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Speaking today with Jackie Hansen, owner of Central Park Pet Retreat in Salt Lake, and Ashley and Ryan Wolfheit. They are founders of Bark and Biscuit. It's a dog training business and also doggy daycare in Salt Lake. So, Ashley, Ryan, I wanted to get a sense from you. You know, I think sometimes people think that the dogs are the problem. And that is true to some degree, right? But I wonder how much of it is the owner sometimes that creates the behavior that they find later on to be undesirable.
Yeah. It oftentimes, you know, is a combination of issues the dog can have on their own, but definitely contributed by owners as well. Just a lack of information or a lack of knowledge on their part. And to touch on what Jackie said, it is really important to start that socialization process young. And since they're not able to start right now, there are a lot of different things that we can do to help them work through that at this stage. But owner contribution to behavioral issues is a pretty big issue with things like anthropomorphizing dogs, you know, treating them more like people than dogs, which is an entirely different discussion altogether. But
I'm willing to have that discussion, because I've watched people dress their dogs up, put shoes on them, glasses.
Right.
I saw a guy riding his dog with a motorcycle with a helmet and glasses on, which, by the way, very cute, but the nuttiest thing I've ever seen.
Well, and
that's
normal.
That is not nutty. And clothes are good.
Right. We're not necessarily against, you know, we have two chihuahuas. They wear sweaters because it's cold and
I have way too many dresses for my chihuahuas.
Yeah, we do, you know, it's more so attaching human emotions to the dog's behaviors. So saying, my dog is really mad at me. My dog is really sad right now. Or, you know, treating them like a person, when those emotional connections in dogs are much different than what people think they are. And I think people do play into that. And dogs are very empathetic creatures. And when we feel something, when we feel stressed, anxious, upset, they definitely reflect that. And so a lot of times our own mental state can actually affect a dog's behavior as well.
So, Ashley, when you mentioned that you have dog clothes, right? I'm going to give you a little bit of leeway here because Chihuahuas are they're rat dogs and they're actually I don't mean that. I mean like
I agree.
They dig at home. They feed on the rats. So that's kind of what they're bred for. But and they're also warm weather dogs.
Right.
They have big thick coats like a husky or a German shepherd. All right, I get that. But how much does that? It doesn't necessarily help the psyche of the dog to have those kinds of human characteristics portrayed. I mean, what do you call it? Projected on them, does it?
No. Well, so I think the important, it's a very fine line, a very gray area. I think with the dressing my Chihuahuas up, when I say that, I don't have sun hats and things like that they have to wear all the time. Mostly it's just to help keep them warm in the winter. Oops, sorry, our baby's crying. And give them a little extra pizzazz for my selfishness. But how I approach it is a different thing altogether. So when I'm putting the clothes on them, I'm not treating them like a baby. It's a dog with a dress on. Instead of, oh, my sweet little baby, now here you're going to sit up on your table and here I'm going to hand feed you food. It's a relationship thing. They still need to follow the pack structure and still listen to me as their leader. And when I say leader, I don't mean so much as alpha, you will listen to me. It's a parent-child kind of like relationship. And again, that gets a little tricky because using those words, parent-child, again, kind of muddles the description I was just giving on how to treat your dogs. You want to have a pack structure in place with your dogs and treat them as dogs, not as kids. And for the dogs they are, which is only fair to the dog, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you have like a couple of like first time dog owner advice tips you give people, like what, if you had to say, what are a couple of the most important things people should do or not do, what would you say that would be?
Crating is one of the biggest things you can do for your dog. And one of the biggest mistakes a lot of people make is they only crate when they leave the house or at night. It's very important to give your dog a break during the day, especially if you live in a house with children. Dogs become very overstimulated. So we need to give them intermittent crating throughout the day to give them breaks. Do you want to?
How does that work? I mean, because I always thought it's like putting them in a little prison.
So with crates, it's I think a lot of people do kind of feel that way.
That's anthropomorphizing.
Yeah, and that's again the anthropomorphization of dogs is, well, I don't want to put them in a cage. But really, the way we treat a crate, especially in training, and every dog that we train has to be crated. It's something that we require all of the dogs to do. Because the crate is more of a den space for dogs, and dogs are den animals, and they do crave that kind of closed off space. So if a dog is, you know, if you have a really fearful dog, and everyone's met a dog like this, they hear fireworks or lightning or a door slam, the first thing they typically do is hide under a table, hide under your legs, hide under a blanket, hide in a corner. They're always looking for that closed off area, and they do crave that crate time. And so the idea of putting a dog in a crate should be more of a place of, here's where you're going to go to relax and be safe, not a place where we're just going to contain you for convenience. Although it does help out in that way, but that's not what we use it for. We use it more of a place for rest and relaxation.
Jackie, we got about 2 minutes to go. I wanted to ask you, as when you come to daycare, do you have certain activities for them that, Ryan and Ashley just described, to give them breaks, or do you have crates and stuff that you provide, or is that a thing that's done in those kind of circumstances?
Yes, we provide breaks. They're out for a couple of hours, about 3 hours, for playtime, and then we bring them all in and put them up for a break. We do the same thing in the afternoon. It's 2 or 3 hours of playtime, and then they get put up for a break. And then we also watch the dogs, and if one is acting out, we'll bring it in for a break. So and then they go in their kennel in their private space, and they're able to relax and feel safe. So yeah, that's something we utilize.
And Ashley, Ryan, do you guys have a similar kind of setup when you have those kind of animals?
Yes, 100%. Our daycare, we usually do about 20 to 30 minutes of socialization time, and then a break of about an hour, and then again another 20 to 30 minute socialization time. We do very structured socialization, so we'll integrate some of our training activities into the social groups, like staying in a place. So we'll have one dog stay in a place on a bed while the other dogs are running around playing to help that dog practice impulse control. We also, you know, have our staff keeping, and I'm sure Jackie does this as well, we have our staff keeping dogs from barking and things like that so that they don't take home bad behaviors, and we help reinforce the behaviors that they're learning with us.
So I was going to say that, you know, as I was volunteering, one of the things I found in these play groups is dogs don't bark between each other very much. And they communicate, but considering we'd have like a dozen dogs out there running all over the place, it was pretty silent. And I found that very interesting, because I think I thought that among themselves, that's kind of how they would talk. But again, that is me humanizing a dog, which really isn't the way they interact. When we come
right.
back, I want to get into that a little bit about what we should recognize in how dogs behave, and then kind of have you guys explain the best ways to figure out how to help people have the best experience they can when socializing their dogs. We're speaking today with Ashley and Ryan Wolfheit, founder of Bark and Biscuit. It's a dog training business in Salt Lake, as well as Jackie Hansen, owner of Central Park Pet Retreat. And we're learning how to help provide the best environment for the dogs we may have decided to get while we were in pandemic quarantine. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Jackie Hansen. She owns Central Park Pet Retreat in Salt Lake City, as well as we're having a discussion with Ashley and Ryan Wolfheit. They have a business called Bark and Biscuit. They do dog training as well as dog daycare. And Amy, who has become the dog lady, I should say the dog couple, she and Ed. So
Ed's worse than me. Yeah, he wants to keep them all. I just want to foster them and find them homes, but he's... Every foster we have, let's keep this one. And I'm like, babe, no. the question I have is, as you're adopting a new dog and you get the dog home, how much time do you tell people to wait before they can make an assessment? Because I found that some of the dogs I get in foster, it takes them a couple of weeks and sometimes a couple of months before they're comfortable enough to be who they're gonna be, to have an identity. And I just wonder sort of what you tell people about that process of adoption.
Yeah, usually you don't see a dog's full true personality until they're 6 months old. Now, these are adult dogs that are coming into new homes, different with puppies. Did that answer your question?
Well, there's a decompression.
Is six months an adult dog all of a sudden?
Well... 6 months is when they go into what we call the teenage months. So 6 months is when they start developing more of their personality. But I think what she's asking is
what I was meaning was, so if you bring home an adult dog, it usually takes about 6 months until you see their true personality. They'll go through a bunch of stages trying to figure out what the new pack structure is, where their place is in the home, that kind of thing. So you don't fully know what the dog's going to be like until about 6 months. Now, I think I missed a part of the question.
So what if you see issues in those 6 months? So
yeah.
You say, I have a dog.
So that's
like,
the most... Yeah. Sorry.
You talked about kennel training, and I had a dog who came to me as a foster. I ended up keeping him, but they said he's kennel aggressive. Yeah. Well, I didn't know what that was. So, I took him, and I just wonder, if you see an issue in those 6 months, like, what do you do about it?
Yeah, you definitely want to seek training help, because that's when the dog is trying to figure out where its place is and what the rules are, what it can get away with, what it needs to do. So if it's your own dog, I recommend getting training. There's a lot of information out there online, and that's what a lot of people do, or they watch the Dog Whisperer. A lot of stuff when it comes to behavioral training is very hard to apply yourself without some guidance. And we offer so much support, even when they're not just doing their training appointments. So to help people, guide people through that, because behavioral training, so fixing issues like the aggression, crate aggression, that kind of thing, that is getting into the psychology of the dog, which is much more intensive than, say, a big box pet store obedience training, where they're teaching the dog to sit and down, that kind of stuff.
That, and you want to keep in mind, too, that we usually recommend, as soon as you see behavioral issues, to try to adjust or try to seek out training. A lot of people will go, oh, well, maybe it'll go away on its own, and that behavior often multiplies or can turn into new behaviors that are even more unwanted. So that happens a lot with when people adopt dogs or foster dogs, that they'll see behavioral issues and they just kind of hope they go away. And sometimes they do, but a lot of times they tend to get worse without any training involved.
Jackie, can I ask you a question? Ashley and Ryan kind of talk about this, the one thing I want to know is, so when people, have you ever had a situation where somebody brought in their dog and they were so poorly socialized that you had to say, you know what, we can't keep them?
Yes, we usually say that when a dog, we draw the line at aggressive. If the dog is aggressive to a human in our facility, one of our employees, we tell the owner we can't keep them. As far as, otherwise we put them in private play or put them one-on-one with an employee. But we have had to turn dogs away entirely. Rarely, but we have done it.
I'm sure that's a sad reality for the owner.
Yeah, it is sad, because people take pride in their animals. They love their animals. They want to see their animals behave. And we don't like to turn dogs away.
But sometimes
we find that the more they come and the more they're socialized, the better they are.
So, Amy, what do you feel? I'm going to give you the last question.
Okay. So then I guess I would ask, we've talked a little bit about some of the common things and a little bit about crate stuff. But when people are trying to walk with their dog on a leash, I think a lot of people, their first impulse when they have a behavior issue is like, I'm going to get my dog some exercise. I mean, I do that. It helps me, right? but what advice would you give people if they're trying to take a new dog on a walk and they run into a behavior problem, like the dog stops and it won't go, or the dog pulls their arm out of the socket? What are some of the things you tell people about walking a dog?
Well, physical exercise is important. Even more important is the mental exercise, which they can also get when they're out walking. A mistake a lot of people make is when the dog is behaving badly on a walk, they continue to walk. For the dog, one of the biggest rewards you can give them is continuing to walk forward. So if the dog's pulling on the leash, stop. Wait for the dog to stop pulling, then start walking again once it's stopped pulling. And most likely the dog's immediately going to start pulling again, just stop again. So as you can tell, this gets really tedious. A lot of people don't have the patience for it, and that's where a lot of that problem comes from. With the not walking, that one's a little more tricky with the dog just sitting and not moving on leash, because it could stem from several different issues. If it's a fear issue, just hang out on your front porch and hang out with your dog and help them get used to being out in the outside world. If it's a dog and that's pretty typical. That's most of the dogs who won't move. It's because they're afraid. So if you just kind of slowly work at more their pace and don't focus so much on having to go run 3 miles with every dog, you're going to help work them through those issues and their fears of being outside. Did you have anything to add on that, Ryan?
Nope. I think she pretty much covered that. It's walking is definitely a big thing. So
Yeah, is there a downside to, like, I take traits and whatever behavior I run into, I bribe my way out of it? Is that a bad thing?
You know, it's not necessarily... if they won't...
or I pretend I'm having so much fun, they right. definitely want to stay with me.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just not addressing the behavior, I would say. It's just...
it's kind of putting a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah, it's just bribing them, because if they continue to do the behavior right after... then they really haven't learned anything. They're just, you know, continuing to do what they do.
And with things like reactivity, if you're bribing them with treats, so for instance, if you're out walking with the dog starts barking, then you get the dog's attention by giving it a treat. What you're really doing is you're rewarding that barking behavior. So the dog's learning every time it barks, you get its attention and get a treat. So that's where... yeah, the treats aren't necessarily the best way to approach that. But if you're trying to keep a dog walking by your side with a treat, yeah, that's totally fine.
Well, if you have any more, I want to, real quickly, you guys have a website if people have other questions for you?
Yes, it's barkandbiscuit.com.
And Jackie?
CentralParkPetRetreat.com.
Excellent. Listen, Jackie Hansen, Ashley and Ryan Wolfhite, thank you very much for joining us today. And as I'm a fellow dog lover, though I'm the one person here who does not actually own a dog, because I'm never home long enough to do it. I'm always grateful to have these kinds of discussions, because it's fun, first of all, but I learn a lot all the time from people like yourselves. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VOR Podcast, and check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or any of the other places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason. Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.